WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. Investigators say they found a car belonging to the man accused of killing a Minnesota lawmaker and her husband and wounding a second lawmaker and his wife. People nearby are being told to be vigilant. The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward for information leading to his capture. Here's correspondent Bradley Blackburn.
The FBI and Minnesota authorities are searching for 57-year-old Vance Luther Bolter. They say the security camera image was captured just a few hours after he allegedly shot two state lawmakers.
Do not approach him. You should consider him armed and dangerous.
Investigators say during the shootings, he wore a mask and posed as a police officer.
A torrential downpour has brought catastrophe to the area in and around Wheeling, West Virginia. It received as much as 4 inches of rain in a half hour, with 911 operators getting dozens of calls for help. Ohio County Emergency Manager Lou Vargo says responding to those calls has been a challenge.
We have major infrastructure damage to roads, bridges, and highways where we couldn't respond to a lot of incidents. So we were delayed in getting there because there was just so much damage.
Vargo says at least 3 people have died in the flooding. He says at least 4 are missing. President Trump says Israel and Iran need to make a deal to end the barrage of attacks on each other, the latest of which have killed at least 10 people in Israel. The ambassador to the U.S., Yechiel Leiter, tells ABC's This Week that Israel is not done trying to eliminate Iran's nuclear threat.
We've set them back dramatically, but not enough. And that's why this series of strikes is not going to end today or tomorrow.
Israel's prime minister says Iran will pay a heavy price for one attack that shattered a neighborhood and killed 6 people, including 2 children, in Bat Yam. The BBC's Param Gobadi.
People are in a state of shock because a building was targeted in their neighborhood. It's really difficult to expect people to rise up and go on the streets and protest when they are thinking about their basic necessity.
And Iran has just said that 5 people have been killed in an Israeli strike on a residential building in Tehran. The postmortem on yesterday's No Kings protest, mostly nonviolent, very few arrests. Los Angeles has been the epicenter for immigration protests for more than a week, and Mayor Karen Bass spoke about yesterday's demonstrations on CNN's State of the Union.
I will tell you that out of that big crowd, 5 people were arrested. About 30 were given citations, and there were injuries on both sides. Officers were injured, and so were people that were there.
Investigators say they've recovered the second black box in last week's deadly Air India crash. The first was found on Friday. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. A new study highlights the high price of incarceration and says the annual total cost to families of Americans behind bars is nearly $350 billion. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
A new study highlights the high price of incarceration and says the annual total cost to families of Americans behind bars is nearly $350 billion. The study from Fora.us says 1 in 2 American adults has seen incarceration in their immediate family, with higher rates among black Americans. Families with a member in jail or prison spend about $4,000 a year, and the report says for black families, the cost is more than double due to longer sentencing. Zoe Towns with Fora.us says expenses like phone calls, care packages, long-distance travel, and new costs at home all contribute to the exorbitant price.
It also includes depressed wages over the lifetime of the person who's incarcerated, who's no longer able to contribute, but also to all the other members of the family. Oftentimes are also now experiencing lower pay just because of all of the shock of incarceration and the disruption that comes with that.
She adds the children of people behind bars usually see their own wages depressed throughout their lifetime time even after a parent is released. Wisconsin's incarceration rate is among the highest in the nation. Black Wisconsinites are locked up at a rate nearly 12 times higher than whites, despite making up just 6% of the state's population. The report shows incarceration rates are also higher for people in poverty, with subsequent expenses eating up more than a quarter of the family income. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. On this Sunday, a mostly sunny to partly cloudy sky with highs in the upper 60s, a northeast breeze. For tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the upper 50s. Monday, we'll see plenty of clouds, some showers and storms, highs in the lower 70s. Right now, it's 73.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, author Laura Bird talks to us about noteworthy memoirs to put on your reading list. And what's the difference between a memoir and an autobiography?
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everyone. You found it. Hey, we're here. The Rational Revolution here on the Civic Media Network. I'm Mark Becker, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is going to be an interesting one. If you want to hear it, share it, all that. We are. You can download the episode at civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts. But again, thank you so much for tuning in. You know, I had a whole plan of what I was going to talk about this week. And then I got a text message shortly after 3:30 on Tuesday that said, what do you think of the column? I'm like, what? And it was from a guy named Dan Schaefer, who's our political director. And I was like, oh, let's see what. Oh, my God. I opened up the column and it said, pass the torch. Tony Evers should not run for a third term as governor. It goes on to say, Wisconsin's governor needs to do what many other Democrats have failed to do and step aside when the time is right. He goes on to say that all things must pass. Tony Evers should not seek a third term as governor of the state of Wisconsin. It is time for him to do what many Democrats have struggled mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. For the 73-year-old governor approaching a critical moment in his second term with 2026 midterms on the horizon, the right time is now. I do recommend everybody takes a read of this article at the Recombobulation Area, which is a 19-time Milwaukee Press Club award-winning column. This really was a seismic piece. It was really well written. It goes through everything from the history of the Biden decision during the COVID-19 pandemic and all of that. It talks about Ben Wickler and his role in the Scott Walker debacle. Like it's really something that we need to talk about, and that's why we're going to talk about it with the man himself, the guy behind the pen or the keyboard, I guess, political director for Civic Media and the Recombobulation man himself, Dan Schaefer, joins the show. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a treat to join you here on the Rational Revolution.
It's an honor to have you. And like I said this before we got on the air, I don't know what fire is bigger, the ones that are in Canada or the ones that you decided to start this week. So,
you know, I got to stir the pot every once in a while. We can't, you know, it's we got to have tough conversations every once in a while. And I think this is one that we need to be having.
It's the dog days of summer, and Dan Schaefer's like, here we go, and tosses a grenade in the middle, and let's see what happens. What was the catalyst? Why did you do this?
Well, this is one I've been thinking about for quite some time, and it is, you know, I think this is a big deal for Wisconsin. I think this is a big deal for Democrats. I think this is a big deal beyond Wisconsin, too, because I think national Democrats have had such an enormous problem with their inability to pass the torch to the next generation that when are they actually going to take this seriously? I mean, after what happened with Joe Biden last year, you know, after Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't retire at an appropriate time. And now, you know, even in the past few years, there since 2022, there have been eight members of Congress who have died while in office, including three since last fall's election, all of whom are Democrats.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many more signs that Democrats need before they realize that it is a real problem to be running candidates who are well into their 70s and 80s. And I think, you know, if you look back on some of the biggest problems that the Democrats had in 2024, I think the Joe Biden factor was the number one biggest reason why Democrats lost the election.
I agree.
His decision to run for a second term and to, you know, go all the way up until the worst debate performance in the history of debate performances. And then to, you know, give Kamala Harris 100 days in a giant hole to crawl out of to make it a race for against Donald Trump, ultimately coming up short. But I think that switch probably saved a handful of Senate seats, down ballot seats across the country, congressional. You know, I think the Republicans would have an enormous House majority had that not happened. And I think at what point are Democrats going to get serious about this issue, about passing the torch to the next generation? And I think we have an example right here in Wisconsin where it is a genuine discussion. Like, I think there are some times where we talk about both sides arguments where it's like a fake both sides argument or whatever. I think there are valid points on either side of this, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term or whether he should step aside and allow for a primary and to, you know, pass the torch to the next generation of Wisconsin Democrats. This is a real both sides argument. But I think it's a conversation we need to be having. And, you know, we're recording this on the Friday before the weekend of the Wisconsin Democratic Party state convention, and they're talking about the road to 2026. Well, they're not talking about who's going to be at the top of the ticket, because Tony Evers has not yet made a decision. He said he will make that after the budget. You know, typically that's wrapped by July this year. I'm not so sure if that's going to be the case.
Right.
So I think this is to ignore this conversation and to not be talking about this, I think, is political malpractice. And I think we need to be having tough conversations for those of us left of center to figure out where we can go from here and start winning elections and start making real change for people.
What an agonizing thing that must be for him, too. I mean, you know, like all of everything that he's done, you know, has been to fight and to fight and to fight and just kind of get scraps towards justice and equality and all these things that he's had to really legislate by his veto pen because of the gerrymandered districts and all of that. And like, I just imagine that little carrot that's dangling in front of him of like, oh my God, I could actually do something, because it looks like there is a possibility that one or both of the legislative houses of Wisconsin would flip. And so seeing that, you know, I've had conversations with people offline about, you know, the desire that Governor Evers has to actually like freaking do something instead of always having to take a punch and try to punch back as hard as you can, but you can't do much when you're outnumbered 2-1. That must be really hard. Yeah,
a couple of things there. One, I think you're right. The prospect of governing with a trifecta has to be especially tantalizing, right? Like to be the guy who, you know, got us out of the Scott Walker years, ended the gerrymander, and then governed with a Democratic trifecta for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be enormous. That would be enormously consequential. But I think we have to remember, one, it's not about the person, right? It's about the people of Wisconsin. And so, like, whatever glory that Tony Evers might have from being that guy to do that, it's ultimately not about the person. It's about the office. It's about what Democrats could do for people. So I think, yes, there is a possibility of a Democratic trifecta. And Tony Evers, I'm sure, would love to be at the, you know, the tip of the spear there. But I think at a certain point, you're risking a lot more than your legacy if you're choosing to run again when you're in your mid 70s. And I think there we have seen from the electorate that there are a lot of people who don't want older candidates. They want a new generation to come forward and to lead. And to another point here on Tony Evers, as I tried to make as clear as I possibly could at the very beginning of the column, the first line of the column is Tony Evers has been a very good governor for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
My issues with Evers are not really policy issues or ideological differences or whatever it might be. My issues with Evers, it is largely an age-based argument, and it is also about building the party for the long term. And I think by staying in office, you know, for a third term, he would stymie the careers and opportunities from kind of the next wave of Democrats to really, you know, take a step up. And we could find out, you know, as the voters, who would really be the ones to step forward. We can talk about some of the candidates that I had on that list later. But I think it is ultimately about, you know, the voters choosing the path forward and not, you know, the consultant class or whatever it might be.
As we're talking with Dan Schaefer, head of the recombobulation area and political director for Civic Media, I do want to talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about the potential candidates upcoming, but I do want to get into, like, you know, if his tenure is done now, how would you characterize what he's done? What are his accomplishments and biggest successes as the governor of Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I quoted Ben Wickler early in the piece here. Yep. He said I interviewed Ben a couple weeks ago on the recombobulation area, and he said Evers' veto pen has been one of the most important collections of atoms in the world in defense of democracy in this state, which I wholeheartedly agree with.
He's so good.
I mean, I think Evers has been the bulwark against a hard right Republican controlled legislature, heavily gerrymandered Republican controlled legislature. I think he brought stability and sanity to the state during the pandemic. Yeah. I think he has, you know, my friend Dan Kaufman wrote this book called The Fall of Wisconsin about the Walker years in the state. Mm. And I think Tony Evers has never let the state truly fall. And I think that is enormous credit to him. He has signed 3 Republican budgets. He has, you know, had a number of other things that people might take issue with. And again, I don't think this is the conversation to be having about that at the moment. But I think, you know, you're right. He has kind of had to play a little bit more defense than he has had the opportunity to really enact an agenda and play offense as the governor of the state of Wisconsin, too. So I think if you're, you know, kind of zooming out and taking this kind of big picture stock of what Tony Evers' time as governor has meant, you know, it has been, you know, a strong defense of, you know, the state's principles and, you know, so much of the election denier stuff and so many else that he has actually stood up for Wisconsinites in so many ways. I think it's been a job well done by Tony Evers in the, you know, 6.5 years now that he's been governor. But I just think, you know, he's not going to be governor forever. He's not a young man.
All right.
So at what point does he need to pass the torch? I mean, he'll be 75. He'll turn 75 in November 2026 when he's on the ballot again. I actually learned that we have the same birthday, November really? 5th. So we will be celebrating the same birthday.
Nice.
So his birthday will be 2 days after the midterm election. So he will turn 75 2 days after the midterm election on November 3rd, 2026, which would make him one of the nation's oldest governors. He's currently the 7th oldest governor in the country right now. Of those ahead of him, 5 of those are term limited. And one is I think the governor of, I want to say Rhode Island is roughly the same age. So he would be either like the first or second oldest governor if he were to be reelected. He would turn 79 while in office. How are we not having this conversation right now? Right. Like, how are we not having the conversation about whether it's the right decision to be running somebody in their mid 70s for a third term in office?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. It's interesting. I started last week, I think I downloaded the audiobook because that's what I do audiobooks. You know, you can't sleep and it's like, oh, let's listen to Jake Tapper talk about what the hell happened with Joe Biden. And I did. I've started that one about what happened and to kind of see Jake go on his media tour and have some pretty hard conversations. He was just on Pod Save America talking about, you know, guys, this is what happened. And to even hear the Pod Save America guys who are very, very liberal say, oh, boy, you know, probably that was not the best idea to do. And I really want to continue this conversation with you on the other side of the break. I want to talk about how long you've been thinking about this. I want to talk about, you know, where this came from. And then, you know, all of it. I want to hear about what people are saying to you, who's going to run, all this stuff. Stay with the conversation here on the Civic Media Network. We've got Dan Schaefer on the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
What if it smells terrible?
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off,
and give us a few bucks. Yeah.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on waukradio.com/contest-terms. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We've got political director for Civic Media, Dan Schaefer, and the man behind the recombobulation area who blew up the Wisconsin political world here this past week by saying that Tony Evers at 75 should not run for governor. How long has that been kind of percolating up there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think... I've had a really strong reaction to the Biden stuff. You were talking about, the Jake Tapper book. I haven't read the book yet, but watching that
dude,
debate,
it's wild, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's so disappointing. It's so disappointing.
And there were so many people who could have prevented this. Yeah. It was a preventable disaster for the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why I wrote this column is because I think we need to have the conversation before we walk down a similar road again. But I think the Biden stuff and watching people in Democratic circles who I talked to after the debate defend his performance and say that he should still be the candidate. I just thought that was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I thought he it was the worst debate performance I had ever seen. I wouldn't elect that guy who was on that stage last night for any office, much less president of the United States. And so my reaction to that has just been, I just don't think you could ever go forward with telling people that he could be the candidate. You can't run a campaign based on honesty and integrity when you were asking people to deny the evidence of their eyes and ears. It's just not going to work. So I think if Biden had stayed on after that, I think, you know, I think Trump wins probably three or four more states. Mm-hmm. I think he wins, you know, Minnesota, Virginia, kind of that next wave of states. I think Tammy Baldwin loses in Wisconsin. I think a number of state Senate and state assembly races go towards Republicans in Wisconsin and in down ballot races across the country. And I think this is just, it's just so clear to me that this is one of, this is the biggest reason to me why Donald Trump is back in the White House. So I approached this year kind of coming into it thinking like, what is Tony Evers going to do? He is, you know, he's 73 years old. You know, when he introduces his budget, I was at his budget address in Madison.
Okay.
And I that's really kind of when I started thinking about this column, because it was just like, is this going to be the type of,
that
was in February.
Okay.
So he delivers his budget address, a proposed budget, you know, that, of course, since then, the Republicans have gutted it and voted all of it out and whatever else. So he proposes his budget in this speech, this ceremonial address. And it's like he's, you know, he's never been like an amazing speaker, but it's a fine enough speech. It's, you know, he's got a lot of great priorities. Yeah. But I was thinking, like, is this a budget that would be your final budget? As the state of the budget is the biggest thing you do as the governor. Is this going to be your final budget? Is he going to put some stuff out there and say, you know, hey, maybe I'm going to veto this budget the way I haven't in the other three if it doesn't include Medicaid expansion or K-12 funding or childcare funding or whatever it might be that has been, you know, a number of his priorities for several budget cycles now. And it just seemed like yet another, you know, kind of the same approach that he took when he was running for re-election a few years ago, right? Mm. And it just seemed like he's going to announce his budget. He's going to do a statewide tour. He's going to fill the potholes. Yeah. He's going to talk to childcare centers. All good things, right? But I just think, you know, from the outside, it does look like he's going to run again. And I think that is probably the most likely outcome. I just disagree with the. I just disagree with that that path. I think we need to have. I think it's time for him to pass the torch. I mean, just look at what happened in. Very recent example here in Wisconsin. We had Ann Wallace Bradley.
Yep.
Now Chief Justice, named Chief Justice to end her time on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. On Thursday afternoon in the state of Wisconsin, had a big ceremony in the Capitol honoring her, thanking her for her achievements. She's 74 years old, and she successfully passed the torch to the next generation.
Right.
The other example that I used similarly in my column is the one of Herb Kohl.
Yeah.
So in May of 2011, Herb Kohl announced that he would be retiring at the end of his term.
Yep.
He was 76 at the time. And this was right after the 2010 midterms where Democrats got absolutely destroyed. Scott Walker won. Ron Johnson won. They flipped the state legislature. You know, the Tea Party wave, all of the stuff that, you know, scuttled Barack Obama's agenda and all of that. Far from a guarantee that a Democrat would hold that seat in 2012.
Yeah.
But Herb Kohl said this at his press conference announcing his retirement. I'll quote, "The office doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people of Wisconsin. And there is something to be said for not staying in office too long." Mm. End quote. So does Tony Evers want his legacy to be more like that of Herb Kohl or Ann Walsh Bradley or Joe Biden?
Yeah.
Does he want to put his legacy at risk? And, you know, things happen to, you know, there's a reason that people in their 70s are typically at retirement age, right? There's could be a lot of health complications that come up. I don't know anything about Tony Evers' health. I'm just saying that he is going to be in his mid 70s and there can be some unexpected health challenges that face people in their mid 70s. We just saw it with Jerry Connolly the late Jerry Connolly in the House. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, does Tony Evers want his legacy to be more like Herb Kohl or more like Joe Biden, or more recent example, like Ann Walsh Bradley, he was 74 year old, just got honored in the Capitol Rotunda successfully passing the torch to Susan Crawford.
So we got a minute for this question. And then we're going to talk next segment about, you know, what the alternatives and options are. We got less than a minute. Why now? Why was this the time to write this column?
Well, he said he was going to make his decision after the budget. And I think we need to be having this conversation before he makes that decision. And I think this needs to be a conversation that Democrats need to be having, that those left of center need to be having, that the political universe in Wisconsin needs to be having. And I don't want to write something before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very strongly about this, and I wanted to have my say before a decision was made.
We're going to talk on the other end. Okay, so let's say that he does retire. What's next? So we got Dan Schaefer here on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network. Stick around for that conversation. I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. Investigators say they've found a car belonging to the suspect in the shootings of two Minnesota lawmakers and their spouses. They're telling nearby residents to be vigilant. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar on ABC's This Week.
The FBI and law enforcement is asking the public, if they see this guy, do not approach him.
At least three people are dead, four known missing after torrential rain and flooding in and near Wheeling, West Virginia. Ohio County Emergency Manager Lou Vargo.
We received between 2.5 and 4 inches of rain within about a 30-minute period. We almost immediately started getting 911 calls for rescue.
Israel's prime minister says the military has destroyed the main facility of a key Iranian nuclear site. Through an interpreter, Iran's foreign minister defends his country's attacks on Israel.
We are defending ourselves as a reaction to aggression. If the aggression stops, naturally our responses will also cease.
CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
The Brewers closed their homestand. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers wrapping up their longest homestand of the season when they complete their four-game series against the Cardinals today. Milwaukee losing 8-5 last night. It was a rough day for Brewers lefty Jose Quintana, who gave up 7 runs before being sent to the showers early in the fifth. Now, Quintana had missed some time earlier with a sore left shoulder, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana's a veteran. I don't know how many years he's been pitching in big leagues. 12?
14.
14 years in the big leagues pitching. He's a pro. I trust him. You know, didn't have his best stuff today. He isn't on it last couple outings. He'd be the first to tell you he didn't have his great stuff today and didn't have his location.
Murph, since Quintana came back, have you seen a little less sharpness?
Yeah.
And stuff?
Yeah, for sure. Hasn't been as sharp. Hasn't located the ball the way he needs to, for sure.
The Brewers will have tomorrow off, then face the Cubs Tuesday night in Chicago. Cubs beat the Pirates yesterday 2-1. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Ted Lasso star Jason Sudeikis learned a lot from his uncle, George Wendt. On a recent episode of the Where Everybody Knows Your Name podcast, actor, writer, producer Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent on Ted Lasso, told Ted Danson that Sudeikis found out about his uncle's death while in the writer's room at Ted Lasso, then added that they matched tears with laughter by watching compilations of George Wendt as Norm. Orlando Bloom is alive and well after his surgery. No reason to panic, Bloom fans. The actor had elective surgery, which was a blood filtering procedure to remove microplastics or forever chemicals from his blood. The procedure is only available at one clinic in London, according to Collider. If you're thinking about checking out this procedure, just know that it costs 10 grand. Let's be honest, most of us will just have to cross our fingers and hope that having Tupperware in our blood isn't as bad as experts say. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. On this Sunday, a mostly sunny to partly cloudy sky with highs in the upper 60s, a northeast breeze. For tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the upper 50s. Monday, we'll see plenty of clouds, some showers and storms, highs in the lower 70s. Right now, it's 73.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin.
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right. You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station
and on the app. Matt Nair on Air.
State Representative Christian Phelps.
As somebody who's in my first term in the legislature, one of the striking things is how seldom the majority party speaks with us. I don't know how many of my colleagues personally feel LGBTQ people don't deserve freedom, but that's kind of irrelevant at the end of the day. They've already spent a number of days attacking trans people because those are days they don't have to spend defending their very unpopular economic agenda.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
At 4 o'clock, I'm joined by Matt Rothschild. We go deep on book banning in Florida. Did you read Judy Blume? Did you like it? Well, Florida kids won't be able to read it anymore. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
We'll let her go for a little bit. Senator Chris Alpine's favorite song, former host of the Rational Revolution. It's good to be here. It's good to be here with Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area and of Civic Media, our political director here on the Rational Revolution. Dan, first off, before I ask a question, I do want to say that as someone who has been in a position where you got to say the thing, I really appreciate your courage to be able to stand up and say the thing. I know it's not something that's, it's not an unfamiliar place for you, but I do appreciate it. And it's something that that's needed, you know? So thanks.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
So you said something last segment. You think that he is going to run. Why do you think that?
Well, I just think that all signs are, it seems like what he's doing now is a whole lot like what he had been doing, I guess, in what would it have been early 2021, yeah, after he'd been reelected and after he was after he was elected second budget cycle. It just seemed like he was setting himself up similarly and doing a lot of the same stuff that he was doing beforehand. Mm. And I think, sending fundraising emails or whatever it might be. I just think it seems like he's headed that direction. But from what I've heard, he genuinely has not yet made the decision.
That's good.
He's asked about this in every media availability he seems have across the state about whether he's made his decision yet. And he said he keeps saying after the budget. and now that the budget is getting delayed and has an impasse and, is going to have its own set of complications over the next month or so here. Yeah. I think that, but I do think he's still kind of on track to run again. I think most 2026 candidates in most other states have made announcements thus far.
Right.
So I think, it's incumbent upon the incumbent to make a decision at some point.
Do you think the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is prepared for a competitive primary like that?
Prepared? I mean, I'm not totally sure. But I think a primary would be a good thing. This is part of what I wrote in the piece, too, is that I think Democrats have avoided primaries, and I think that's been to their detriment. And
yeah.
I think, the situation with Harris last year, it was so late in the game. It was like, OK, this is an acceptable enough process to not have a primary. She was the vice president that I was fine with that. But also, I don't think it was a good process, right? I think we would have been better off if the voters had decided. And I think in 2022 here in Wisconsin, when all of the Senate candidates dropped out and endorsed Mandela Barnes, I think Mandela Barnes was a good candidate, may have even overperformed expectations in that race, even if he came up short. But I think his candidate would have been a little sharper had he faced some more robust competition in that primary. I think there is like this iron sharpens iron quality of these primaries that makes these candidates better situated for a run. And I think it would be, as we're in this moment talking about what's the next best path forward for the Democratic Party and, who's the Joe Rogan? We need to find the Joe Rogan of the left we need to find the best messaging, or is it going to be abundance or populism? How about we let the voters decide? I think it needs to start with what direction the voters want to go. And we can talk about the list of candidates, but I think, and I may have some people on the list that I favor more than others, but I think that's not the point. I think the point is getting back to the small D democratic process,
right?
That I think so many of us believe so strongly in, that is going to be the path forward, that the voters are going to give us the path forward, not the consultant class, right, not whoever else, not the party bosses. It's the voters who matter at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think it would be kind of cool to see someone who is, a center left person that's like a consensus builder, like not not the crazy right now Tommy Thompson, but like what's the Democratic version of the common sense Tommy Thompson from the 90s that worked with everybody, that everybody said, hey, he's a good guy. Let's. So who are the candidates that that would come to mind? I think the Democrats have a really big bench.
I think it's a pretty strong bench. I think that's part of it, too. So I think, as I wrote in the piece, if Evers decides not to run, candidates could include Attorney General Josh Call, Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, State Senator Kelda Royce, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and the soon-to-be former party chair, Ben Wickler.
Do you think he would do that?
Undoubtedly a few more on that list, too. So I think it's a group of more than qualified candidates. Like, I think this is a pretty strong bench. And looking into a 2026 election cycle that might be more advantageous for Democrats. I mean, that's the history of a midterm election. When you have a Republican in office, it's usually a better year for Democrats in the midterms. We saw that in 2018 with the blue wave. So I think there's that's a factor to be considering here as well. And then, you know, look, I don't know. What do you think of that list of candidates there?
I think it's good.
Is there anyone I missed?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting as like some of the candidates that have announced for other seats could make a run, like Rebecca Cook. You know, I think she would have been a pretty, she's already announced for Congress, but I think that she is someone that, you know, in a purple district that I think people would be able to listen to. And I think what's important is it's not just the Milwaukee Madison area. You have to come up and you have to perform in Green Bay. You have to perform, you know, in the western part of the state. You have to perform with blue collar people. And you can't perform well with blue collar people by doing a lot of the same things that Democrats have been doing over the last 15 years. You cannot do that. And so who is that candidate? Jeez, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's crazy to think, you know, of who that would be. Is it someone that's elected? Is it someone that's not? You know,
you know, it could be an outsider. It could be, you know, the host of Rational Revolution, you know, whoever it might be.
I've had friends that have said, you can't run for that. It's got to be a state office if you do anything at all. And they're like, oh, okay, sounds good. Yeah, whatever.
But I think, you know, and I think on the Republican side, too.
Yes,
I
mean, what happens there?
I think the field that they have for potential gubernatorial candidates right now is awful. Yeah. I think they have a really rough group.
Tom Tiffany.
Right now. I think Tom Tiffany, you know, whether if he decides to run, he might be the highest profile name. I don't know if he has any kind of crossover appeal.
He's
outside
terrible.
Of a deep red district in the northern part of the state. Washington County Executive Josh Shulman has thrown his hat into the ring, the only announced candidate on the right now. I think he is a terrible candidate. Yeah. I think he is wildly overmatched for this.
Yeah.
We ran a piece at the Recombobulation area a couple weeks about this from columnist Jordan Morales, who wrote a piece about how in one of the reddest counties in the state, Washington County, in 2022, he failed to get a police funding referendum passed.
That's hilarious.
Like, what is the record that he is running on at all? Right. And then, you know,
I think he'd be
like
a great candidate
and rehash candidates and like whatever else. This guy, Bill Berrien, who's a political unknown from southeastern Wisconsin business community, is considering a run. Sure, I guess. Brian's the one guy who I think would change the conversation if he did decide to get in, I think would be Brian Stile, first congressional district representative. But I think he's going to be running again in that seat. I think he is, you know, he's been kind of rising in the ranks in the House.
Yeah.
And I think maybe he's smart enough to realize that this isn't the best year for a Republican to be running in a statewide race.
Well,
to take that shot.
And that district is a targeted district by the Dems. And so I think that the Republican Party, the big GOP, is going to ask him to stay there because they do need someone with his
history.
But
he has consistently overperformed in a more competitive district than some of his other Republican counterparts. And so I think, you know, if there's a member of Congress in the Wisconsin Republican member of Congress who is probably best positioned for a statewide run, I would say it's Stile. Maybe that's for Senate in a couple of years.
Yeah. Now. I wonder if Gallagher would come back. I don't know, but he did the whole Trump thing. So that might tick him off. Is Hovde still got his ear to the ground?
I've heard Hovde's name in the mix too. Yeah, his name will come up when in these articles talking about Iran. It would not surprise me at all. That came up when we were talking about that on Matt and Aaron Air this week too,
as
potential Republican candidates, and I think Jane thinks he's going to run again. Yeah,
that would be a mistake. What has your reaction been to the article?
It's been a range of things. It's been, you know, right-wing media has had some pretty bizarre reactions to it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that at all. Like Dan O'Donnell went on the radio the other day to talk about how this is part of a coup.
So
instigating a palace coup. And he insinuated that like somebody is whispering in my ear for this column, and this is part of a larger shadowy effort to push Evers out and make way for Ben Wickler. Which is so ridiculous. Like, to think that I am behind some sort of palace coup, I'm just a guy writing an opinion column in Milwaukee. Like, nobody's whispering in my ear about this. This isn't part of a larger effort. This is just one guy with an independent opinion column who has a take.
And, you know, Dan O'Donnell, he's got to come to the defense of Tony Evers, who he repeatedly punched in the face here, apparently. You know, he feels bad for the guy. Dan O'Donnell found his moral compass, which is great.
There's been some I expected some people to disagree with me on this, and I'm not surprised that there have been some who have. But I think, you know, I'm also a little bit surprised on how many people have spoken positively about this column as well. I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, you know, bold of you to write this. You know, I wouldn't have been the one to do it, but. You know, thanks for saying this. I agree with you. You know, it's time, whatever. So I think there has been the reaction to this. I expect it to really, you know, kind of piss people off with this one.
Uh-huh.
And I would say the response has been much more positive than I anticipated.
Dan Schaefer with his closet full of Molotov cocktails is, you know, I'm not going to ask for any names, but has anyone reached out and messaged that are like, oh, wow, okay. That have surprised you privately
a couple. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I think the general consensus is like, are you a fan of the movie Big Lebowski at all?
I've never seen it. My brother is.
Okay. So there's a line in the Big Lebowski where people say, where, you know, John Goodman's character is saying, am I wrong? Am I wrong? And the dude says, you're not wrong, Walter. You're just a blank, you know? So that's kind of just been the general reaction to the column this week.
We got a short on time here. We got about a minute and a half left. I know we talked about, we let the people of Wisconsin decide. However, we can't, you know, we got to do that. We got to do this. Who do you think would be the best candidate, and what voters do they need to attract?
I'm just going to keep with what I said in the column. I'm sorry. I think this needs to be the voters decide. And I may have people that I you know, think of more strongly. I endorsed David Crowley early in the process for Milwaukee County Executive. I've been a big fan of his for a long time. You know, I don't know what his name recognition is like outside of the Milwaukee media market. So I think, you know, just as one example. So like Crowley is somebody I've backed for a long time. Would I do that for governor? Maybe, but I'd also want to see, you know, what a campaign would look like once it goes from the hypothetical to the reality too. I think that matters as part of it too, but I think it ultimately, it should be up to the voters to decide. I think the consultant class thinking that like, oh, you need to have a candidate in mind and oh, let's clear the field for this person and blah, blah, blah. I absolutely hate that mentality.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Well, if we got 30 seconds, if Tony Evers does step down, how seismic is it? How big is that? What does that do to Wisconsin politics?
I think it is a big deal for Wisconsin politics, obviously, but I think this is something that could reverberate nationally. I think that we always know, I mean, we just saw about the spring election and how that impacted the relationship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. We know that all eyes in the political universe are always on Wisconsin.
Yep.
And I think it's one thing for like 80-year-old Dick Durbin to retire in a blue seat. I think a popular governor in a purple state like Wisconsin retiring and passing the torch to the next generation would have reverberations nationally.
Dan Schaefer here on the Rational Revolution. Thank you so much. We got him on the Civic Media Network. Dude, thanks.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, Treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Tarrant County, Texas County Commissioners approved a new county redistricting map June 3rd, diluting the votes of Black and Hispanic voters. But commissioners claim the gerrymandering was for political, not racial reasons. The map likely eliminates a majority-minority district and has drawn widespread condemnation and a Voting Rights Act lawsuit. County Commissioners and senior county official Judge Tim O'Hare brought in the Conservative Public Interest Legal Foundation and the National Republican Redistricting Trust to draw the map, according to reporting by Democracy Docket. Their efforts apparently manipulated the districts to gain another GOP county commission seat and a 4-to-1 advantage. Analysis by the UCLA Voting Rights Project and Southern Methodist University found the approved map packed District 2 Black and Hispanic voters into District 1, reducing the chance a Black or Hispanic candidate would be elected in District 2. Because the county staggers election cycles for different districts, it also disenfranchised as many as 150,000 voters, heavily Black and Hispanic, who can't vote in their current district's 2026 election and must wait until 2028. Voters sued under the VRA and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The commissioners claimed that they gerrymandered for political advantage, to which the Supreme Court turns a blind eye, and not racial discrimination. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill backed by Donald Trump that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation area.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. Wow. I feel like I need to like take a breather after that. Jeez. Serious thanks to Dan Schaefer for, you know, having a lot of courage to say what I think needs to be said too. And it's definitely not the easy thing to step up and say something that might not be super fun to say. And we're going to use that segue here on the Rational Revolution to say some other things that people might not want to hear, but they do need to be said. And I want to talk about a challenge that kind of cuts to the very core of our democracy. And it is the challenge of how we respond to protest, civil unrest, and most importantly, violence. It is a topic that I think demands moral clarity, even when it's politically inconvenient. And I believe that it is a moment right now for Democrats, not just as a political party, but people who care about truth, justice, and our democratic institutions. We have to take the high road. And let me start by stating this plainly and unequivocally. Violence has no place in a democratic society. None. Violence has no place in a democratic society. Whether it's throwing a brick through a window, or setting a car on fire, or a mob storming the Capitol chanting about hanging the vice president, violence undermines the very freedom that the protest is meant to protect. And we must never be afraid to say that. And we must never hesitate to condemn violence, even when it emerges from people who may otherwise share our political views. That is what it means to have principles. That is what it means to be a leader. We all say this. We say this all the time on this show. This is not about left versus right. This is about right versus wrong. Yes, there are deep and legitimate reasons why people take to the streets. Protests are often born of pain, injustice, inequality. They're born of voices that have gone unheard for way too long. The right to peacefully protest is a cornerstone of our democracy. It is. It's not only something that is clearly legal, but it is essential. From the Boston Tea Party to the March on Washington, protests have been the way Americans have bent the arc of history towards justice. Period. But when that protest turns violent, we do lose that moral high ground. The cause becomes blurred by the chaos, and so we as Democrats must be clear-eyed. We must be willing to say, no, we do not condone burning of buildings and cars. No, we do not excuse looting. We do not rationalize violence, because not because we want to appease anyone, but because we believe in something better. We believe that justice and the law are not mutually exclusive. But I do also want to address something else. We have to talk about the rank hypocrisy that we are seeing from people on the other side of the aisle. When protests erupted in cities like Minneapolis or Ferguson in the wake of George Floyd's murder in the summer of 2020, protests rooted in the centuries-old fight against racial injustice, all of those protests, Republicans were so quick to moralize that. They almost immediately clutched their pearls and pointed to, oh, the broken windows, the burned cars, the spray-painted statues. That was proof that the Democrats have completely lost control. They called those communities war zones. They called the protesters thugs and terrorists. And Fox News ran that looped footage for weeks. Those demonstrations, most of them peaceful, that captured the nation during that summer, were rooted in righting the systematic injustice that has hung around our country's neck as our original sin for generations. Those reasons, those very valid deep wounds in our society, were completely ignored by the right, as they used that very moment to politicize the fight for justice and equality. But then, on January 6, 2021, when a violent mob fueled by lies about a stolen election that were incited by the former president and current president stormed the U.S. Capitol, we heard something completely different. That demonstration, which was a direct attack on the very fundamental pillars of our democracy, was rooted in lies, hatred, and evil. And where is the same outrage then? Where was the wall-to-wall news cycles and harsh condemnations? Where was the moral clarity? Instead, we got excuses. We heard that they were patriots. They were simply expressing frustration, or it was a tourist visit. Let's not forget, oh, by the way, they erected gallows. They broke into the people's house with zip ties and bear spray. They beat police officers with flagpoles. They searched for the vice president of the United States, saying out loud they wanted to hang him. And many Republicans said, wait for it, nothing. Some even defended it. The protesters, they received presidential pardons. That is not just hypocrisy. It is cowardice. It is complicity. Now, I'm not saying one form of violence justifies another. That's not the point. The point is, if we're going to be a nation of laws, values, and of truth, we cannot be selective about when those laws apply and when those voices matter. We don't get to pick and choose our outrage based on political convenience. And even now, when our protests are incredibly justified, Democrats must not fall into that trap. We must take the high road, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard, because when we speak out against violence, whether it comes from a protester in the street or a rioter in the Capitol, we are not weakening our cause. We are strengthening it. We believe in change, not at the barrel of a gun. We believe in progress, not by smashing windows. We believe in democracy, and democracy means working within the system even when it is slow, flawed, or frustrating. It means protecting institutions and not attacking them. We got to take the high road. Take the high road. Happy Father's Day to you, one and all. I love you guys. Download the show on the Civic Media app. I'm Mark Becker for the Rational Revolution. We'll see you.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. Israel's leader says its military has destroyed the main facility at Iran's principal uranium enrichment plant at the Natanz nuclear site. The given reason for this past week's strikes on Iran, CBS's Aaron Navarro reports Israel was considering taking out another prime target.
President Trump vetoed an Israeli plan in recent days to kill Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, according to three U.S. officials. During a Fox News interview on Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu gave a half-hearted denial when asked about it. He said, quote, "There's so many false reports of conversations that never happened, and I'm not going to get into that."
Iran claims Israel has hit a residential building in Tehran, killing five people. That comes after an overnight attack that killed at least six in a residential neighborhood in Israel. The BBC's Hugo Bachega is in Bat Yam.
There is a lot of shock here.